Welcome to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. You went to college, earning a degree in electrical engineering and a master's in computer science. Along the way, you became a person of deep faith. Then you start a small high-tech business in a room in your Bozeman, Montana home. It takes off, eventually employing 1,100 people. In 2012, you sell it for $1.8 billion. Suddenly, at 50, you're a very wealthy man. What do you do now, and why? You're Greg Gianforte. Greg, many thanks for joining us on Home Ground.
Brian, my pleasure to be here.
Where were you born? Where'd you grow up?
Well, I grew up on the East Coast. I was the son of a public school math teacher, and my father was an engineer. I think my mom would have been an engineer if she hadn't been a math teacher, but back then, women didn't go into engineering. Grew up west of Philadelphia and fell in love with Montana at an early age.
How so?
Well, I had a junior high school science teacher who flew fighter planes in World War II, and he trained at Malmstrom Air Force Base. And on a junior high school science salary, the only way he could afford to come to Montana was to bring a whole van load of ninth graders with him every summer.
So not in his fighter plane, I assume.
No. That would have been a faster way to travel. But we came out here in 1976, and I think four individuals from that trip ended up moving to Montana, and I was one of them.
What stuck? Why'd you come back?
Well, the outdoors. For me, I'm an engineer, and I started at Bell Laboratories on the East Coast, but my wife and I had three children on the East Coast. And we're about to have our fourth, and we wanted to raise our kids in Montana. So we moved to Bozeman, and people thought we were crazy.
When did you move?
95.
As you look back on your years before college, what key values did you learn growing up in your family that still stick with you?
So I think the first thing was family. My parents were very, very close. They worked together as a team. And I can remember the support I got from my father. No matter what sport I played, he ended up, if I played football, he was the head of the football boosters. If I played baseball, he was there at every practice. And he traveled a lot. He had a big job with General Electric and traveled all over, but he always found time for family. That was one that really came home to me, was the value and the support I had from family. The other one I found was that you don't have to have things figured out to go try stuff. And initiative pays dividends. I started my first business in junior high school mowing lawns. And I'd go out and get all the, in the spring, and get all the neighbors to agree to let me cut their lawn. And I'd sign up way more business than I could take care of. And then I'd hire the neighbor kids to go do the lawns for me. And they won, and I won, and it was a good deal. And then in high school, I started my first software company. And that was I learned a lot from that.
What?
Well, honestly, the lesson that hits home to me most, I had a guy hire me who didn't pay me. And I had to deal with the fact that the world isn't always a nice place and that people don't always keep their commitments. And for me, the value of your word is a lot. And I think that's part of what aligns kind of my worldview with Montana, because your word matters here. Somebody says they're going to do something, they're going to do it. And that's what I loved about running a business here in Montana, because the work ethic is unmatched. And the reason we had such success at Right Now Technologies, I think in large part, was because of the Montana work ethic. We had a guy from Dillon, Travis Cottom, who came to work for us. And we shipped him off to British Telecom to do a big multi-million dollar installation in London of our software at Right Now Technologies. And I got a call from the executive at British Telecom after this had been going along. And he said, "We've never had a project go this smoothly. This is an amazingly political place. It's a minefield of different interests and thiefdoms and all these sorts of things. And your guy came in here in blue jeans and cowboy boots and just got her done." He didn't use those words, but those were the words he meant to use. And he says, "Where do you find people like this?" And I said, "We find them in Montana." And that was a really neat day. The culture we had it right now was a huge competitive advantage. And I just think there's so much unlocked potential in Montana.
We'll talk about that. Obviously, from my introduction, it was a tremendous financial success. You've just explained why, in terms of a workforce, it was a tremendous success. What else was its key to success?
There were a couple things. I think we started with a good premise. Right Now Technologies was my fifth software startup, not counting the one in high school. And we were able to combine three really disruptive events that were going on. There was a movement to the cloud. We were really one of the first cloud application software companies. The second thing was the internet was disrupting the way large consumer businesses dealt with their clients. And thirdly, the software industry was plagued with poor ethics and poor business practices. And we really leveraged all three of those to gain an advantage in the marketplace.
Who figured out those problems? You?
Well, we had a great team. I was the first guy. My wife and I started the business together, as you mentioned, an extra bedroom.
Lucky you had an extra bedroom. I mean, the whole story might have been different.
Maybe we could have gone to the garage. But the first month, I made 400 phone calls and called people who I thought were being impacted by this internet disrupting customer service. And everyone said the same thing. And then at the end of the first month and 400 phone calls, I knew what they would buy. So being an engineer, I locked myself in a closet for 6 weeks and I built the first product. And so I had 40 paying customers before we ever hired the first employee. So we were completely self-financed. And I hear, you know, it's interesting, when we moved to Bozeman, people said, you can't grow a global business in Bozeman, Montana. And they gave us the reasons why. They said, you don't have the right people. There's no venture capital. The airline service isn't any good. And there's no internet connectivity. Well, we ended up growing a business that was one of the 100 largest websites in the world. And it's interesting, as I travel around the state now and talk about more high-paying jobs mm-hmm. and what's possible for Montana in every single community, people say to me, oh, well, yeah, that can happen in Bozeman, but it can't happen here. And they give me the same four reasons why not. And I think our biggest obstacle to more good jobs here is skepticism.
Psychological. Skepticism
yes.
is psychology.
Yeah, I mean, Montana has the talent. Montana has the work ethic. We need the entrepreneurs and the fortitude to just go take a risk and take the leap and go make something happen.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with entrepreneur and philanthropist Greg Gianforte. We're jumping ahead here a little, but it flows from your last answer. You believe high tech could make a significant economic impact in high-paying jobs in Montana. Summarize why you think so and what you're doing about it.
Yeah, so there's a number of things. First, let's just look at the data. I'm an engineer, so I always start with data. Montana is 49th in the country in wage scale. We're almost dead last, only ahead of Mississippi. I think the solution to creating more high-wage jobs in the state is we've got to focus on industries that have high-wage jobs. This is not a huge conclusion. If you look at the U.S. Department of Labor data, number two in the country is high-tech. The average wage in high-tech is $94,000 a year. Our average wage in Bozeman, Montana was $86,000.
Yours.
At Right Now Technologies.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Average across secretaries, salespeople, engineers, all blended, $86,000
a year. But let me just ask you, because sometimes the high salaries are very high and they distort the average. In the coal mining industry, you did a show about that. So what did a secretary make?
My secretary made about $55,000.
You were saying. So it's high-paying jobs.
Yeah. So, and the other benefit of high-tech, and we saw this in our own business, over 80% of our revenue went to wages. There really is no capital equipment. And almost every dollar came in from outside the state. So I think the solution is to create a larger economic pie that will help more people. All told, over a 15-year period, we brought about $5 billion into the Gallatin Valley through wages and the ripple effect from their wages.
Someone might say that's great for what you did and some other people in the Bozeman area. I originally came up from California 25 years ago. Silicon Valley was an experience. Similar phenomena, I suppose, in terms of high-paying jobs. But the overall impact on the economy is something else in the sense of how replicable, how many jobs. So as you envision it, from your perspective, What are we talking about? 5%, 10%, 15%? I'm just throwing out numbers of a Montana economy in 10 years if everything worked the way you wanted. How much is affected by the high-tech enterprise?
Well, I think it can have massive impact. I mean, to be specific, the misperception people have is that high-tech only creates jobs for geeks. And the reality is at Right Now Technologies and other software companies, only about 10% of our expenses were research and development. The other 90% was on marketing people, accounting people, lawyers, and there was a good blended national wage across that whole group. But the other thing that happens is when dollars come into the community in the form of high wages and get paid out, those people then shop downtown. And economists tell us typically when a dollar comes into a community from outside, it bounces around 3 to 5 times before it settles someplace. The reason we have tremendous vibrancy on Main Street in Bozeman, we do have great retailers there. It's because of all the jobs that exist in the office parks there. That's what we'd like to see happen in every community across the state.
But the implication of that is that you think that there's high-tech business potential in, quote, every community across the state or most communities across the state. Is that a fair conclusion?
Yes.
So just in terms of your time, it's part of your philanthropic outreach. What are you doing to promote that idea?
Yeah, a couple things. One, just telling the Right Now story and trying to inspire people being a cheerleader for high tech and saying this is a possibility for Montana. We've also just started the Montana High Tech Business Alliance, which is a nonprofit trade organization. We've got almost 100 members signed up. The website's wthightech.org. And the goal there is just to shine a bright light on high tech so people know there's an opportunity. The other issue we ran into was although high tech creates jobs for people of all stripes, the seed corn in high tech is computer science graduates. And we uncovered that the whole MUS system in the spring of 2013 only graduated 40 computer science students statewide.
MUS, Montana University System?
Correct.
Okay.
So we started a program called Code Montana. Me and Robbie Arzari, who is a coworker of mine at Right Now, and we had 1,200 high school kids this past year learn about computer science in high school. And just recently we announced that they can now get college credit if they participate in that program.
Okay, that's on the high school side, but I believe you're also involved in mentoring of potential entrepreneurs.
Yeah, and I have a group, it's me, it's called the Bozeman Technology Incubator, and I provide free mentoring to anybody who's trying to start a high-tech business in the state. I've done about 230 pro bono mentoring sessions in the last 18 months, and I'm not sure I'm going to start another high-tech business myself, but I can live vicariously through all these entrepreneurs who have lots of energy and don't know things are impossible yet. So that's another element of it.
Sounds like you enjoy that.
A lot.
Why?
It connects with who I am. I love to create things out of nothing. I mean, I think each one of us has been given certain skills, and it's kind of up to us as a steward of those skills to use them effectively. And I'm a creator. I like to create things.
The material your office provided to me in preparation for this interview includes information about the Gianforte Family Foundation, which has given away almost $30 million. And part of that work includes this entrepreneurial educational outreach. Fair?
Correct.
Okay, let's talk about some other parts. The top line of the foundation webpage reads, "The Gianforte Family Foundation was established in 2006 by Greg and Susan Gianforte in response to God's great goodness to them." There's a lot of religious language. There's a cross by the name of the foundation. Tell us about your faith and its origins.
Yeah, so I believe that just as we are stewards of the skills that we've been given, we're also stewards of the resources that we've been blessed with. And we've had tremendous success in business. And that's what the American dream is all about, that people can use their skills in a way to better their life and that of their kids and grandkids. Our faith convicts us that, for me, that to whom much is given, much is expected. And as I finished up with the transition with Oracle, we were thrilled that, every single employee that wanted a job got a job with Oracle, and now Oracle is the largest single employer in Bozeman, commercial employer. That I had to reflect and say, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? And I've been at this stage before with prior businesses, and one of the things I concluded, I like to fish and I like to hunt, but I didn't want to end up with a tombstone at the end of my life that said he caught a lot of fish. I think better is possible. And again, as I said, I'm a creator. I think my calling is in creating livelihoods for people, because I don't think anybody starts out thinking, oh, I hope I can grow up to be dependent on the government. So what I'm about at my core is using the skills I've been given and the resources we've been given to create opportunity and prosperity for people.
One could argue there are a lot of ways to pursue that path, and obviously you're the one who's making the decisions. Let me just read under your mission statement. The primary mission of the Gianforte Family Foundation is to support the work of Christian organizations engaged in education, poverty, and outreach work. It's a very clear website. It provides a list of organizations. Listing on the foundation website, jobs, education, the family, ACE Scholarships, Family Research Council, Friedman Foundation for Educational Choice, named after Milton Friedman, the Heritage Foundation, the Montana Family Institute, and is it Petra or Petra Academy?
Petra Academy.
Petra, you're the chairman of the board.
I am.
Now, in looking at the materials that come from the website, it seems to me, at least at Petra, it says at Petra, this is a quote from the website, we believe all things are under the purview of Jesus Christ. When it comes to education, this faith has consequences. It also gives primacy to the inspired word of God as the final authority of all wisdom. So that sounds to me, as a layperson, as a pretty Christian-centered educational support. Is that fair?
I think what is really necessary is that parents have choice in education. And Christian education is one option. The ACE program that we started was to deal specifically with the high dropout rate of low-income kids in the state of Montana. Here, more than one out of four kids from a low-income family does not graduate from high school. This ACE program that we found is a private sector program in Denver, took the inner city graduation rates from 51% to 92% in Denver. We made a commitment, our foundation did, 2 years ago to bring that program here to Montana. We now have 700 kids on scholarship across the state. And I'll tell you one quick story about a girl, Aspen, who's in Billings. She was a sophomore in high school, daughter of a single mom. She was stuck in a schooling situation that wasn't working for her. She went to her mom and said, I'm not going to graduate if I don't get into something different. Her mother said, I have no way to pay for private education. She said to her daughter, you can do it if you find a way to pay for it yourself. Average private school tuition in the state of Montana is about $5,000. Mm-hmm. She found out about ACE, which was a $2,000 scholarship. The school gave her $1,000. She worked all of last summer to raise the money to get into a schooling situation that would allow her to be successful. I think we need a little more tension in the system so that parents have more choice.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We are talking with business entrepreneur and philanthropist Greg Gianforte. Obviously, the issue of school choice and government-funded vouchers is controversial. It's gone to the Supreme Court a couple of times. I read on the Friedman Family website a brief summary of Supreme Court decisions. We don't have time to go into that. The argument against it, and I'd like to get your response, is that using government money to fund religious education violates the separation of church and state. Obviously, you disagree. And if so, could you tell us why? What your thoughts are?
Yeah, there's lots of forms of school choice. Montana is one of eight states that has no school choice legislation. In every state that has enacted school choice, and it's been held constitutional in many of these states, most of these states where it's been challenged, academic performance in the public schools has gone up. The reality is, as a parent as well, we know each one of our children is created differently. One size does not fit all in education. In the last survey that was done in Montana, over 50% of the families in the state said they would opt for something other than a public education if the option were available to them. I think school choice is one of the best ways to improve our public schools.
Okay, and the answer that I hear from the other side of the argument is, by taking kids out of the public schools, often wealthier children, you are undermining the quality and funding for public schools, and that if one was interested in improving public education, the idea should be to work together to improve public education. Do you have any interest in approving, or any of your investments go to public education at K through 12, for example, from your perspective?
The answer is yes. I mean, we launched the Code Montana program, which is available to all public school students. But I would challenge the myth that you just put forward. It turns out school choice programs, as enacted in 42 states, primarily serve low-income kids, not high-income kids. In fact, high-income families, people with means, have school choice already because they can choose to write a check. These programs are designed for low-income kids where the public system is unable to serve them. And the reality is, in these public systems, if the kids are doing well, they stay. The ones that opt for school choice are the ones that don't fit in the public system.
Just one more point. I remember doing a show on a private school, and the administrator told me that getting public vouchers, that is, public-funded kids, was important to their financial success because in Montana, the number of parents wealthy enough to do it on their own was small. And so that, in fact, enhanced or was necessary for the economic viability of the private school. Is that a fair generalization? Would you see any problem with that?
At Petra Academy, our accreditation prevents us from accepting any government money. So I don't know the answer to your question.
Back to the Petra Academy, let me just read one of the it uses classical Christian teaching methods as it describes. One is logic, and this is a quote, "For example, having learned observable phenomena of the physical universe, students learn the, quote, scientific method, end quote, as the way to logically use observation to point toward the most probable hypothesis." One of the criticisms from secular educators is that some Christian schools, for example, refuse to teach evolution, believing in either creationism or intelligent design. What's the Petra curriculum on that score?
At Petra, our goal is not to teach the kids. It's to train the mind to think. We teach the theory of creation. We teach the theory of evolution. We really, the whole idea in a classical Christian education is to raise up a young person who knows what they believe and why and can defend and express themselves articulately. My four children went to Petra. The first one went to Caltech as an engineer. The second one went to Carnegie Mellon, finished up at MSU. The third one's finishing his senior year at Cornell in linguistics. And my daughter, who got a perfect 36 on her ACT, we're very proud of her, is going off to Stanford this fall. So I would invite anyone. We have an open house at Petra every Thursday from 9 to 11. We'd love to have visitors come see what we're doing. The results are remarkable. I wouldn't say it's the right school for everybody, but if you want to be academically challenged and you want to really to get grounded in what you believe and why, nothing can beat a classical Christian education.
The public policy argument, as I understand it, in terms of vouchers, is in part based on some people in the community feeling that federal government tax dollars should not be used to help pay for education of children in a Christian-based view of creation as opposed to evolution. What's your view for that controversy or your personal opinion?
Well, first off, federal dollars aren't used for education. They're state dollars for K through 12 anyway. And my personal belief is that I think parents know what's best for their kids. And at the end of the day, I think if we had a system that allowed each parent to decide what's best for their child, that would be the best outcome. The problem we have today is parents don't have that choice.
I can't pull it up of the files that I've looked at, but I believe one of the organizations, perhaps the Montana Family Foundation that you fund, is clearly pro-life. Does that reflect your personal serious philosophy?
Yes, I'm pro-life.
Does pro-life mean to you that, from your perspective, public policy should prohibit, in most cases, abortion, that is, the law?
I am pro-life, and I think that we would have a better society if public policy reflected that.
Okay. My question, and I have equally, I think, pointed questions to somebody that would be pro-choice. In this case, once a mother is required by public policy to have her baby, for moral reasons of society, saying you got to carry that baby to term, what moral obligation do you feel as a Christian man society has to assure the mother and infant have adequate food, shelter, clothing, housing?
From my Christian faith, I really believe we have an obligation specifically to care for those in society which can't care for themselves. This is why we're involved in Love, Inc. in Bozeman, helping with crib ministries for single moms, for furniture and subsistence. It's the reason why we help with pregnancy caring centers to provide free medical care to young moms with children. I think there's a really strong obligation there.
I think from reading your materials, it is clear you feel that personal obligation and implement it through your generous philanthropy. My question is a social obligation, just a statistic. The infant mortality rate in the United States, death within a year of birth, is 7 per 1,000 live births. In Canada, it's 5. It's a 40% lower rate. They have a legal obligation to provide care after birth to children. All children get postnatal inspections, guaranteed nutrition. We don't in our society. As you know from your poverty work, many people don't. Should we have that sort of governmental support system as opposed to relying on generous people like yourself?
We have a big experiment going on in this country right now with Obamacare. I don't know what the outcome's going to be. I do know we don't have it figured out yet. I'm not sure I have a specific solution for you.
Let's go back to the earlier primary focus of your work, which is the high-tech entrepreneurial initiative. How's it being received across the state? You're getting around talking to people.
Yeah, it's been, I'll tell you, it's a lot of fun. I was just up in Lincoln County and Eureka and Libby, and boy, you know, it's such a beautiful part of the state. Size of Connecticut, 20,000 people, 16% unemployment, 92% of the county is owned by the federal government. They don't have a whole lot of hope. I was in a high school. Of the 40 kids I was talking to, 37 of them said they wanted to leave the state when they graduate. We need to create more hope in these communities. I am getting some pushback in certain communities.
How come and why?
Well, I don't know. For some reason, I'm a Christian, as we've talked about. I'm a conservative, and I'm a successful business guy. And somehow, success in this country has become villainized. Christian has become a pejorative label. I'm focused on, I've been incredibly blessed, and we've enjoyed tremendous success. And I wanna share that with the rest of the community. And I think in Montana, high tech represents an opportunity to create better outcomes and so we can stop exporting our kids and our grandkids out of the state. Here in Helena, when I asked 300 people in a public talk, how many of you have kids that don't live in the state anymore? 90% of the hands went up. Our most precious resources are kids. We got to create a better future. It's going to be done through better education. It's going to be done by encouraging entrepreneurs to create jobs here so they have a future here so they don't have to leave the state.
Greg Gianforte, I very much regret to say we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us on Home Ground. And to our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week.
Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studios. We welcome your ideas for new programs at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, Cinnabar Foundation, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication about issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.